he had to get that one in there, guys. He had to get it in there.
Now, some of you have been invited to this service, First Love, and you're thinking, well, what's all this about? Are we going to have a nostalgic trip through all of our first people whom we've had those special feelings for? That's not going to happen, so don't worry. Let me start by explaining as to how the idea came about. I don't know about you, but certainly for me in the past, Valentine's Day has not always been my favorite day of the year.
That's right.
I've heard one person describe it as Singles Awareness Day. And there have been some Valentine's Days that I've thought that it's been specifically directed to make me feel bad about being single. On one particular Valentine's Day, it was shortly after splitting up with my ex-girlfriend. And kind of the day was kind of coming. And I was thinking to myself, is anyone going to remember me? Is anyone going to send me a card? And I did get a card. It was an emailed card. And I opened up the attachment, and it was a picture of David Hasselhoff with the thickest moustache that you've ever seen in your life. And it said, don't worry, somebody loves you, baby. Linda, do you have any Valentine's stories?
Sorry, guys, I cannot top that, but I've got a bit of a sad one, so you're going to have to run with me here. My story happened when I was in secondary school. 13 years old, madly in love with this guy, as I always was. So I prepared myself, I saved, and I bought the nicest Valentine's card and a small chocolate. And I was marching to the cafeteria to go and give him this card and profess my love in front of everyone.
That's great.
I really have to thank the girlfriends, because my girlfriends came to my rescue. Unbeknown to me, he was in the cafeteria telling everybody that he did not like me. My girlfriends come running out, stop me in my tracks. I rip up the card, throw it in the bin, and march the other way. So thank you, girlfriends, who were there to comfort us and to that we can encourage each other at these times. Thank you, girlfriends.
Thanks to the girlfriends. Back to how this kind of came about. We're having this discussion, like sharing sub-stories about love and Valentine's Day. And we kind of thought, wouldn't it be great to have an event that looks at love in a way other than romance? You know, in a way that, don't get me wrong, romance is great, but it can be short-lived. We wanted an event that perhaps looked at love in a way that everybody could relate to and in a way that everybody's experienced. To help us to kind of get this perspective on love, we asked a few people some questions on what is love to them. And we filmed some of the answers. So we're going to go to the video before we continue with the welcome. I love that video. I think it's quite clear who the star of that video was. But one thing that I found really, really interesting is the number of people who made the connection between love and sacrifice. And I think we can all perhaps relate to somebody who's demonstrated love to us via their sacrifice, whether that's been sacrifice of time, money, or energy. This event is really about the way in which Jesus has shown us his love, by sacrificing and dying on the cross for us. In Romans chapter 5, verse 6, and you don't need to turn there, I'm going to read very slowly. You see, at just the right time, when we were still powerless, Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous man, though for a good man, someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Jesus has shown us incredible love by dying for each and every one of us. And this event is essentially a celebration of that love. So why is it called First Love? Why have we gone with that name? Well, in dying for us, Jesus essentially put us first. He puts us before his needs, his comfort, and even at a point his desires, if you think back to the Garden of Gethsemane. And we hope that throughout the course of the service and the various events, you'll have a deeper understanding of that kind of love and be moved to make Jesus first in your life, Jesus the first love in your life. Thank you. I'm going to call up Joe Caleb and Elisa, I think it is.
And when he appears to one Melanie is going to be coming up to give us a testimony.
Right, good morning. I'm really grateful to be able to share a little bit of my story with you. My name's Melanie Thomas. I'm Jamaican. You know, and I grew up in a family with six kids. There's three boys, three girls, and it was a single-parent family. My parents met when they were really young. You know, they were teenagers. They fell in love in high school. My mom got pregnant when she was 17. My parents got married when they were 19. And by the time my mom was in her early 30s, she had six kids, and I was one of them. And you know what happened was that my mom stayed home, and she took care of those six kids. And during that time, my dad went off. He became an engineer. He started earning a lot of money. And he was growing, you know? And my mom was, like, at home just kind of being the provider. And what happened when I was nine is that my dad kind of said, you know what? I've outgrown this woman, you know? I'm here. I'm with my educated friends. And, you know, this woman didn't even finish high school. She just bore my kids. And he went away. He left when I was 9 years old. He moved to New York with a lady who's now married to her now, but at the time she was only 3 years older than my oldest sister. And he moved away to New York and he left my mom just standing. You know, and I remember growing up, seeing how bitter my mom was. You know, we spoke about love and sacrifice. My mom always used to say, I sacrificed for that man. You know what I mean? I bored his kids. I took care of them. I clothed them. I fed them. And he walked away. And I remember growing up thinking, there's no way any man's going to do that to me. You know what I mean? There's no way I'm going to put myself in a position where I get so dependent on a man and, you know, he'll walk away and hurt me. And I certainly grew up that way. My mom reinforced those ideas. You know, I remember she used to take the three girls in and she would sit us down and she's like, you need to study. You know, your brothers can run around, play football, but you guys need to study. You need to be educated. You need to be independent. You need to be hardworking. And, you know, if anybody asked me what are the two gems that my mom gave me, it was independence and hard work. And I'll be honest with you, that worked for me. You know, I went to university. I decided to become an engineer. I studied hard. I got a good degree. I left university. And I got a good job, you know, getting paid quite a lot of money. And, you know, the gems from my mother worked. Hard work, independence worked. And I planned my life. I planned how I was going to run a construction site. I planned how I'm going to become the CEO. I planned how I'm going to marry this man, have a few kids for him. But really, you know, Mel's going to be what she wants to be, you know? And I planned my life. And I tell you, 6 years ago, something unplanned happened. You know, I was walking to work, and I saw this Irish girl across the road. She came over to me, and she said, you know what, I want to invite you to church. And I said, you know, I'm really not into that. You know, church is for weak people. You know, I have a kind of lot of stuff happening otherwise. And she pursued me, and I tell you, the story goes on, and it happened that 6 years ago I got baptized. And I tell you, for the 2 years of my Christian life, the two early years, I was just blown away. You know, I started finding out about a God who really wanted to have a relationship with me. A God who was boundless, but still decided to, you know, put himself in a body who was Jesus Christ. A God who loved me. And my first 2 years as a Christian were great. You know, I remember feeling really excited. I remember feeling something in my stomach every time I read the word, every time I shared. I remember the very first time Fun Lola and I went out to evangelize. This is when I just got baptized. We met a non-Christian. You know, she studied the Bible. You know, and I felt like, God, you know what? If this is the Christian life, I could do this. I didn't plan it, but I could do this. And I want to tell you, after those 2 years, I felt like God was really gentle with me. I felt like he was carrying me, you know, like a mother carry her newborn baby. I really felt that way. And in my third year, things started to change. I started to feel like, well, you know, this Christian life isn't what I thought it would be. Do you know what I mean? I felt like there was a disparity between what I was reading in the Bible about God's promises and my own experiences. You know, this God that I longed for, this God that excited me in my first 2 years, started to seem distant. And I started to think that, well, it's not as cracked up as it used to be, as what I thought it would be. And it's interesting because, if you know anything, when things don't go right in my life, you know, things not going good at work, I work harder. I put in the hours. And when I felt like my relationship with God wasn't going how I wanted it to be, I started working harder. So I started to pray more. I started to read the Bible. Any Christian book that I saw, I bought it. You know, and I felt like, okay, probably I'm not loving people enough. So I started spending more time with people. And the more that I did, the less I kind of connected with God. And it's strange because I felt like, you know what, God, you know, I'm doing all these things for you. Why is it I still feel so distant? And I tell you, I remember going to church one day and this brother who I'd known for about 3 years, because by then I was 3 years a Christian, and he came over to me and he said, Mel, I just, you know, would it be okay if I become your friend? And I said, well, you're a bit weird. You know what I mean? I've known you for 3 years. I don't understand this kind of friendship thing. And he said, you know what? I've been seeing you. We've only had kind of really loose conversations, but I'd really like to be your friend. And I thought, you know what? God, this is in church. It's that Sunday. I've got to do the Christian thing. And I said, okay, fine. You know, I could be your friend if you want to be your friend. And I tell you guys, for about 3 months, this brother wrote me notes. He'd come over to me and he said, Mel, would you like to have coffee? And the truth is, I used to make up lies. I used to say, you know what, I'm busy. You know, my week's full on. You know, I have loads of stuff happening at work. I have my netball. I can't find any time. And every week, this brother would come over. And he would say, okay, could I call you at 9 o'clock on a Thursday? And I said, you know what, on a Thursday, man, I have something going on. And then he never, every week, he still came over. And he said, Mel, could I? He would never, he knew my number, but he would never call me. He would always come over to me and ask permission whether he could call me. And then I said, right, okay, right, you could call me Wednesday. I can't remember what it was. And he rang me, and we had a good conversation. And that went on for a couple more months. So this is during this time, I'm feeling really distant from God, and this brother is, like, really pursuing me, you know, really, like, wanting to spend time. And then I started to think, gosh, you know, I've got to find a way to kind of break it to this brother that I really don't like him. You know, it's not really my kind. It's not my type. I wasn't attracted to him. I felt like this brother's kind of wasting his time, and I don't want him to continue on with it. And so one day I just got a bit annoyed in the service, you know, after church, and I went over to him and I said, you know what, I really appreciate the effort you're putting in, but, you know, I think there's some beautiful women, you know, in our congregation who would really like the encouragement, you know, and I think, like, you shouldn't waste your time. And this brother looked at me and he just looked at me a bit weird, and then he started to laugh, you know, and he said to me, Mel, gosh, I'm really sorry, you know, because I just realized that you think that I like you romantically. But the truth is, I don't. And for the next 5 minutes, his brother goes on into telling me the reasons why he didn't like me. You know, he kind of listed out. He started to say the kind of woman that he was looking for in Christ. And he was like, Mel, you're none of these things. And I tell you, that was heartbreaking for me. But you know what the brother said to me? He said, Mel, I know that for the past 3 or 4 months, I've been really trying to have a friendship with you, and you've been really finding it difficult. And, you know, he said, I've been praying that hopefully one day that, you know, you would find it to come over to me and ask me if I'd want to spend some time with you, to come over to me and ask me whether or not, you know, I could call you or something. But he said, you know, even Mel, if you never get to that place, I still want to be your friend. And he said, Mel, is that okay? And I tell you, man, I was shamed for about 30 minutes because I felt like, how could I think this brother liked me? You know what I mean? And all of a sudden he's saying he doesn't like me. But I tell you, that earthly relationship that I built with Doug, he's married now, really helped me to see the relationship that God really desired for me. And this emptiness that I was feeling was because I was using the wisdom that my mom gave me, the independence and the hard work, to try and build a relationship with God. But God was saying, you know what? I just want to be your friend. You know what? I'm going to love you not because of what you can do, but because you are who you are. And that was amazing. Looking back, there are times during that year that I felt like giving up. You know, there are times during that year I felt like this relationship with God isn't what is cracked up to be, you know, this intense emotional feeling. But through that relationship that I have with my friend Doug, he's really helped to show me that, you know what, relationships, they're really good times when you're really close to each other, but there are times when there's that bit of distance. And during that time, it isn't the time to walk away. It's the time to kind of just reach out and really, you know, just accept the love that God wants to give you. And I want to just say, you know,
that if you're not a Christian, that God's just waiting. He's pursuing you, you know, he's waiting to give you that relationship. And I know my relationship with God's probably very different to the relationship that other Christians have with God. But I know that there's an incredible relationship that God just wants to form with you. And for me, I've now been a Christian for 6 years. And I look back at that third year, you know, the year that I call the drought year. And I think, you know, gosh, you know, I look and I see how much I've grown through that. Because now I feel so much more secure in my relationships. Not just with the relationship I have with God, but the relationship I have with people as well. You know what I mean? And I really desire to have relationships where people just accept me for who I am, you know, as God accepted me. If you're a Christian and you're feeling that void, you know, don't walk away. Because I tell you, God's just really waiting to hold your hand so that you could look back and say, you know what? I could see a face of God that I've never seen before. So I give God the glory, you know, because it's great to be a Christian. And I'm just going to invite Rob up to just share his own testimony.
God is very kind to you, because there's a clock right in front of me, so I can't keep going on and on. Okay. It's quite scary, but it's also a privilege to be able to come up and stand here and talk about, in my case, how I became Christian. Because everybody's story of coming to Christ is unique. Everybody is different. But it's also a privilege to be able to share my particular journey and how God reached out with his love to me, so that, you know, if there's any value, if there's any encouragement to be had, Christian or otherwise, hold on to it, because all these messages, they're all about God reaching down to us through his love. My story's not that simple. I'm also a programmer, so I tend to talk in lists and bullet points, so I'll that will happen here. Years ago, I felt that, before I became Christian, I felt that I had everything. So, I mean, I was in a relationship with a woman for 4 years, and we never argued. It was great. I had a home, I had a cat, I had a job that I enjoyed and I was pretty good at as well. So I felt like, you know, I don't need God. But I wasn't even that conscious of it. I was atheist, but I wouldn't care enough to do anything about it or act in an atheistic way or challenge people. I might argue with somebody about God, but that was purely because I like to argue and to be proved right. There was nothing of actual caring about it. That situation of being in a very secure and feeling very much in control went on for quite some time, for several years. And eventually, you know, actually, looking back on it, you can see where God starts to really make himself known to you. But at the time, it felt bad because a few things went wrong. I mean, the catalyst was there were some health issues with my girlfriend at the time. And she's totally fine now, thank God. But it started to put strain on our relationship. And work was getting quite hard. And there was a lot of evenings and overtimes. And so I wasn't actually even being at home to support the girlfriend when she needed it. And that resulted in a lot of friction, a lot of tension. And there was a friend. I became friendly with a woman at work. And sort of people can probably feel like alarm bells going off there. She was a Christian woman. And she wanted to be friends. And she was happy to talk about God. But I was trying to take more from the relationship than she was prepared to give. You know, I very much sought out comfort and affection. You know, I liked giving it, I liked receiving it. So that was my take on what love was. You know, it's a mutual thing, it's kind of, it works out quite well for both parties, and, you know, it's good, you know. And all through this, I'm definitely not putting down what is love between a man and a woman in marriage, and, you know, those are wonderful things, but as time passed, I began to learn about God's love, because there's my description of love, and then there's God's. But it came to a point with me and this Christian woman, and she was going like, okay, it's going too far. You're trying to take too much. We need to have a break. And, you know, and I thought, okay, that's fine. But then I sort of took a bit of a hit on that. And then the next day I came into work to find we'd all been given notice we're going to be made redundant in a month. And I was like, okay. So suddenly my world was suddenly very, very unsure. I had, you know, because we'd been looking to buy a new property as well for a bigger place, with maybe a thought of marriage and maybe a thought of kids, but I didn't really think about that. That's too much like commitment. But eventually, this happened, and suddenly we had to stop looking for a place to live, a new place to live. You know, I had to look for work. And actually, these things brought on me, it made the relationship even harder, and it became apparent over the course of that month that me and my girlfriend were going to split up. So I'd have to move out and find a new place to live. And that didn't cheer me up either. But I'm stubborn, so I sort of thought, okay, well, I could have got some comfort off of this other woman at work. So I went back and I started sort of putting straightforward questions, you know, why can't we be together? And the answer would be, well, I would like to have a husband who will strengthen my faith. Okay, fine. Can't we just be boyfriend and girlfriend then? Well, no, why would I want to have that relationship if it can't lead to marriage? And so I sort of going, well, why, you know, where does this come from? Where is this direction, you know? Because I've never read the Bible, but clearly God's about love and doing good things, right? So why would he object to me and her actually just having a relationship and sort of being quite nice? And so I thought, you know, I mean, it sounds a bit like a sort of spoiled child, just keep poking and sort of, mummy, I want the sweet or whatever. Not really listening to reason. But there was a point where I felt God, you know, I looked back and God had given me enough wisdom to think, well, she was very well biblically versed. And if I was going to have a conversation about what the Bible did or didn't say, then I'd have to read the Bible. Because clearly the Bible, which I didn't know about, clearly it was going to say everything I wanted it to say. And all the stuff she was saying, who had read it, wasn't in there. A bit ridiculous when you think about it. But I had this picture of, right, okay, church, tells you what to do, tells you what to do with your time, tells you what to do with your money, tells you who you can and can't date, marry. You know, actually, that's awful. That's not Christianity. And I got very suspicious. I started reading the Bible. I even went to a church service, you know, expecting to see some, I don't know what I was expecting, but some guy up the front with a whip or something, you know, do this, do that, you know, and everyone going, all right then, okay, why not? But I turned up to the service and a barrier was sort of broken down there, because actually what I saw was people who were very humble and worshipping God, and there wasn't anything particularly strange about it. Sure, they believed in God and I didn't, but other than that, these are people who are humble and trying to do the right thing. And that brought down one of the barriers. So I carried on studying over the course of this month, and there were very various things where reading the Word has an impact. Now, people who are Christian and read the Bible, you're not surprised by that. To me, it was a bit of a revelation. When I started reading the Bible, I didn't even believe Jesus was a real person. I thought he was made up. And so it was quite a humble moment to realize, actually, even, you know, biblical scholars who aren't Christian, they don't question whether Jesus was real, because there's enough evidence from the time to suggest he was. Okay, so I went through the process of going, okay, he's real. Then there was another process of, okay, he's a real person, and he actually did die on the cross, but mistakenly believing he was the Son of God. But even that had a power, because it's like, well, what do I think about strong enough that I would go up on a cross and I would die? Whether I was right or wrong, could I believe in something that strong? So that was another moment, but I was still holding off. Anyway, the day came when we were all kicked out of our company, and it was Christmas Eve. And my girlfriend, who we'd split up, she'd gone off to her parents, and so I went back to my home, and I was feeling pretty crushed, because the last conversation had been with the woman who was saying, actually, we should be distant. You know, you're studying the Bible. I want you to become Christian, but I'm a distraction. It's getting in the way rather than helping. And that was the right thing to do. But actually, at the time, I was just like, okay, I'm deeply distressed, deeply upset. What I want is not there. And I was actually on the bus on the way home. And I became overwhelmed with grief and sort of loss. And I started questioning, going, God, if you wanted to reach out to me, if you were real, you've just blown it. You've just missed every opportunity you've had. And why was I arguing with God when I was saying, God, you're not real? I don't know. But I was deeply upset. I got off the bus about 30 seconds later after getting off the bus. No one was around, so I started to cry, and men will only generally cry in private places. I have cried in my life. Yeah. And as I started to cry, the phone rang, and I was like, okay, hello, who's this? It was my old company, and they were offering me my job back. Out of 20 people who were being let go, they had placed a safe two, and I was one of them. And I was like, okay, God, that's quite suspicious. You know, there I am questioning your existence and saying you've missed any chance. And then I get this call. And actually, there was a moment, that was another of the steps, because I actually started to believe in a God. However, cynical me still didn't believe whether it was the God of the Bible. And I thought, okay, I'm going to test you and find out whether you're the God of the Bible. So that was a miracle one. And I went back, and the next thing in January, I was still studying the Bible, but I had to move out of where I was living. And so the process of finding a flat. And I found this place, and it was very, very cheap, and it was in great location. I went there, I met two of the flatmates. They were lovely, so it seemed to go okay, and I met the other two flatmates. And while I was there, I talked to the guy, and I said, so what are you doing? He goes, well, I'm training to be a minister in the local church. And I thought, okay, God, I'm studying the Bible, I'm trying to find out if you're real. Not only have you found me a great place to live, I've now got a live-in biblical scholar. Yeah. I'm not saying I knocked on his door at 4 a.m. saying, can you explain the scripture? But I mean, it was similar to that. And I studied with him, and I studied with the people from this church as well. And the barriers came down, basically. God had given me everything I needed and had rescued me from my despair and my feelings of self-reliance. And it reached a point where I was actually being advised by two different people on how to become Christian. So there was a hold up there of a month where I sort of studied and spoke to people about what is the way to become Christian, because I wanted to become Christian, but I wanted to do it right. I eventually did what I thought the Bible said. So everything, whatever people say to you, actually we keep coming back to the Bible. That's the source of knowledge. So I went out, I repented, I put Jesus Christ as Lord, I got baptized, and I became Christian. And what I have to say and what I look at from that, not only there's so much that God has done to me, but in light of today, of love, you know, I felt very knowledgeable about material love and how to look after people. But reading the Bible and also seeing what happens during the miracles that God did for me, I keep coming back to sort of various scriptures about God's love for us and how it's poles apart from what I know. And we've already seen 1 Corinthians 13 of love is kind, love is gentle. I have to read it out. Love is patient, love is kind. It does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud. It is not rude, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth, and it always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. And the idea of the first love, to me, God loved me before I even knew of him. It is something that a plan was put in place that I, Robert Swan, in the year 2004, would become Christian, because Jesus died for me such that when I looked towards God, he was there ready and waiting. And also, the last thing I want to share is, after I became Christian, I gave my testimony then, and I read out a scripture from Luke 15, and I think as well this shows God's attitude and love towards us as well. So I would like to share Luke 15 quickly. Jesus told them this parable, and he's talking to Pharisees at the time. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbours together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep. I tell you that in the same way there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. And I feel a lot of things about God. But God is secure. God is something you could bank on if the banks weren't in such a terrible state. You know, I've been Christian for coming up to 4 years. I'm still single. Work is still quite tough. But God is secure. He is solid. He will not let you down. It is unconditional love. And my life is going to be punctuated by my actual birth, my birth as a Christian, and I will die and go to heaven. God is in control of these things. That's the love that will get me to where I need to be. Okay. Thanks. Joe is just going to come on and give an announcement.
Thanks so much, Rob and Mel. This is going to be a really brief one. 10-minute fellowship break.
I know people like to talk, but please try and keep it to 10 minutes. There's scones and tea at the back. So we'll be back in 10. Thanks.
Hello? Is there any... Is there any main mic or just anyone? One. We'll be able to play a little bit of the song or not?